morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals on this dreary October 10th, 2019. Good day to be inside. First matter on the calendar is State of Minnesota versus Alberto Cruz. Counsel, you are all familiar with our procedures. You will each have 15 minutes to make your argument. The timing is indicated in the lighting at the podium. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And it's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your arguments. So with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Sharon Jackson. I'm the Assistant State Public Defender representing the appellant in this matter, Alberto Cruz. Mr. Cruz is challenging his convictions for driving after cancellation and misdemeanor DWI based on evidence that was obtained as a result of the execution of an invalid warrant.
Okay, just before we get going, how does the DAC conviction relate to the suppression issue?
The parties agreed that the case could be resolved based on that issue.
Even though it doesn't depend on, okay.
Yeah, you know, he waived his rights to a jury trial, and that was the agreement of the parties. But the warrant here was invalid because Nobles County violated the Data Privacy Act by including in the search warrant affidavit private medical information. When Mr. Cruz was admitted into the jail here, he had his urine taken in order to determine appropriate medical care for him within the jail and his housing unit. The parties agree that that is private corrections data, and that's governed by Section 1385 of the Data Privacy Act, and they agree that the Act does not expressly permit disclosure of that evidence in a search warrant affidavit. So the question is...
The parties also agree, though, that that information can be released to a law enforcement agency if necessary for law enforcement purposes.
If necessary for law enforcement purposes, that's right here. And here it's...
And on appeal, you're not challenging the release of that information from the jail staff to Officer Shea.
On appeal, we've focused on the facts that Nobles County Officer Shea included that in the search warrant application.
But
certainly, it wasn't necessary in any, for the same reason it's not necessary for the search warrant, it wasn't necessary to release it because Officer Shea had other information about Mr. Cruz that he could have included in the search warrant application.
You're not making a challenge based on subdivision 5, though, that it was improperly released.
You're not
arguing that it wasn't released for law enforcement purposes to Officer Shea.
Well, we're arguing that it was improperly released in the search warrant affidavit.
Not arguing that it was improperly released to Officer Shea, correct?
We're not arguing that that's improperly released because that's not dispositive of the case.
In the argument before the district court, though, that was the focus of the case.
That was the focus of the argument. We emphasized different facts in the district court. And on appeal, because the dispositive issue is whether or not... Regardless of whether Officer Bohr released it or shared it with his colleague, Officer Shea, within the Nobles County Sheriff's Department, the dispositive issue is whether or not they could include it, Nobles County could include it in the search warrant affidavit. That's when the issue becomes right for the court. Now, we're not conceding that it was okay for the colleagues to share the information. It wasn't necessary for law enforcement purposes, but we did not affirmatively make that alternative argument in our brief.
But wasn't that the focus of the district court's order?
The district court described the issue as the legal issue here is whether or not a UA performed as part of the booking process can serve as a basis for the issuance of a search warrant for a blood draw. And the judge denied the motion to suppress on that basis.
Well, if you look at the judge's order on page A3 of the addendum to your brief.
Which page?
Yeah.
A3.
Okay, thank you.
In the middle, or two-thirds of the way down the page, it says, defendant argues that the Minnesota Data Practices Act was violated by releasing private urine test results for the defendant to law enforcement officials. And then the discussion focuses on 13.85 subdivision 5 and whether the test itself was unconstitutional. And then the judge concludes on page A4 that the urine test conducted during the booking process was not an unconstitutional search, and the data was appropriately reported to law enforcement. So it doesn't seem to me that in reading the order, and I've read it a few times now, that the judge ever really addresses the issue that you've raised on appeal here, which is whether the disclosure or the inclusion of that information in the search warrant violated the Data Practices Act.
Our argument is that these two issues are intricately interrelated. The dispositive issue is whether or not the evidence was properly included in the search warrant affidavit.
But it wasn't ever expressly argued to the district court, correct?
The
argument you're making here today.
The emphasis, we are focusing on different facts, emphasizing different facts today. I'll back up a little bit and say to the court that the broad issue is whether or not it was properly included in the search warrant affidavit. Part of that is, although we acknowledge that we did not emphasize it in the brief, the transfer of information between these two colleagues at the Nobles County Sheriff Department. As a preliminary matter, no, it wasn't necessary. They had plenty of information in order to obtain a search warrant affidavit. All they had to do was include in the search warrant affidavit the fact that he had been driving erratically, which was the reason that they believed that he was under the influence of drugs. Instead of including that information, the officers included private medical information.
Well, didn't they include both? I mean,
No, they did not. They did not include the information about the erratic driving.
Oh, but the irritability, the body tremors, the rest, I mean, the observations.
They did the observations of the defendant, and they included also the fact that he passed the PBT. So they did not, they assumed that he was under the influence of something. It wasn't alcohol. They agree that what's in there doesn't establish probable cause without the private medical information, and that's because they failed to include the erratic driving, which is what's always included when attempting to establish probable cause for a blood or urine test. Now, one of the reasons that, you know, this issue of whether it's necessary for law enforcement purposes applies both in directly under subdivision 5 and in the construction of the statute, which is the question before the court here, is does the statute implicitly permit the inclusion of this information in the search warrant affidavit?
Well, and you're right. And to me, that's the ultimate question. I have always thought of a warrant application directed to an officer of the court as a presentation to a court. Why is that incorrect?
It is a presentation to the court. And the question is, can, within that presentation to the court, law enforcement include private medical information? And there's two reasons why they can't. You have to look at the canons of construction that apply to determining the legislative intent and what a statute permits. And one of them is that the expression of one thing is the exclusion of another. And here, the legislature said there's two circumstances under which you can disclose this information. One circumstance is to the victim, if necessary for restitution purposes. The other is to law enforcement, if necessary for law enforcement purposes. This is a disclosure to the court when it's not necessary for law enforcement purposes. In fact,
I thought this was all about law. I mean, isn't the arrest for DWI pursuant to a warranted search part of the law enforcement purpose?
The testimony here was that the information was collected in order to determine appropriate medical care for Mr. Cruz in the jail. And that is what the Nobles County Jail Sheriff's Department does in every single case. Regardless of what someone is arrested for, they take their urine in order to determine and test it for appropriate medical care and what housing they need to have in the jail. That's private corrections data. The question then becomes, can they just pass it on to the court in order to get a warrant for blood? And they
can't do that. The jail staff gave it to Officer Shea for law enforcement purposes, and then Officer Shea...
There's no testimony that he gave it to Officer Shea for law enforcement purposes. It wasn't necessary for law enforcement purposes. Officer Shea...
But you haven't challenged that here on appeal.
Well, we didn't focus on those facts, as I said before, in the brief. Certainly, we have not conceded that.
Well, but the district court concluded that the data was appropriately reported to law enforcement. And you haven't challenged that.
We haven't expressly challenged that in the brief, correct, Your Honor. Without question, if that's where the court thinks that the core of the argument is, we would acknowledge that our brief isn't as comprehensive as it should be in that respect, but we certainly haven't abandoned that argument. I mean, clearly, it wasn't necessary for law enforcement purposes. They are a law enforcement agency, Nobles County Sheriff's Department, and the one deputy took the urine for medical purposes, and the fact that he shared it with his colleague does not all of a sudden turn the data from medical purposes to all of a sudden law enforcement data. In fact, the core tenet of statutory construction that's being violated here is that the court has to presume that the legislature did not intend to violate the Constitution. And if you adopt the state's interpretation of this statute, they can violate the Fourth Amendment. In State versus Thompson, the Minnesota Supreme Court made it very clear that
the
search
is the violation, and you're not challenging the search, the search being the taking of the urine.
We're not challenging the taking of the urine.
You're challenging the sharing of the information, so how?
Under the Data Privacy Act. You have to construe the Data Privacy Act, and you have to construe it presuming that the legislature did not intend to violate the Constitution. And by allowing private medical data to be included in a search warrant affidavit when the Fourth Amendment requires law enforcement to obtain a warrant in order to obtain the information, it's just making an end run around State versus Thompson.
But doesn't Subdivision 4 contemplate that information can be shared with the court?
It does contemplate if there is some authority by which, I mean, Subdivision 4 says, if it is shared with the court, it becomes public. That's the whole problem here, is in effect this information has been shared with the public because it has been shared in a search warrant affidavit.
But implicit in Subdivision 4 is that there has been a presentation to a court.
Correct.
And I don't understand, what's the difference functionally between sharing this information for a warrant purpose and sharing detention corrections data in like the context of a PSI? I mean, that happens all the time.
Well, a PSI is confidential, and so then that would not be shared with the general public.
But it's still filed with the court.
It's filed with the court, but
so
it remains confidential.
Why doesn't that violate the data privacy?
Because there's a statute that says it's confidential after filed with the court. So even if we...
But what you're talking about is the transfer of the data to the court, not the classification. You're saying that the law doesn't authorize the transfer, the dissemination of the data to the court. And how is that different for a PSI? Where in the law does it specifically state with regard to a PSI that law enforcement can provide that to a court?
Our position is that it's at the point, because it wasn't, so for instance, we wouldn't be challenging this had it been shared with the court in a confidential affidavit.
But
it's basically a disclosure to the public at the point that it becomes public information. So it's not the judge per se, it's that it becomes public information. A PSI would not become public information because there's a statute.
But it's not a disclosing to the public, it's a filing with the court. And how the court treats it is up to the court, because as you know, the judiciary is exempt.
Correct. And so our focus is on the transfer by law enforcement to the court. It is not an indication, or we're not challenging that the judge here has done something improper.
But you're arguing that this information can never be provided to a judge.
No, we're not. We're arguing that it can never be provided to a judge if it's not necessary for law enforcement purposes. At that point, it can't be provided to a judge.
Isn't a warrant necessary for law enforcement purposes? Isn't that the purpose of a warrant?
This information was not necessary to the warrant. In fact, it was a circumvention of State versus Thompson. If you read the statute...
But it was necessary because there is nothing in the affidavit about observed erratic driving.
They could have included that instead and chose not to. That was not private medical information.
Where in your brief do you make that distinction that you're only arguing that it can't be filed with the court if it's not necessary for law enforcement purposes?
In the reply brief, we do make the point that there has to be some independent provision that would permit it. So, for instance, in the context of the... I see my time is...
You may complete your answer.
In the context of the... victim evidence for restitution, there's a separate statute that indicates when it can be released to the court. There is no separate provision that permits it to be released to the court when not necessary in a search warrant affidavit. And doing so would, if the statute's read to allow that, it would circumvent the Fourth Amendment and permit law enforcement to obtain urine samples without getting a warrant as required in State versus Thompson.
Okay, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Travis Smith, and I represent the respondent, State of Minnesota. The question appellant would like this court to answer is whether the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act prohibits law enforcement from disclosing information they lawfully obtain to the district court in search warrant applications.
Well, isn't the issue about when can they release it?
The issue, as argued on a...
It says may be released to law enforcement if necessary for law enforcement purposes.
That's correct.
What was necessary here for law enforcement purposes?
It was necessary in order to investigate a DWI investigation. And it must necessarily be necessary at this point in time because appellant has argued that the search warrant is invalid without the information. And I think that demonstrates the necessity of the information. Furthermore, I don't think it's up to criminal defendants.
Is there a difference between something which is helpful to law enforcement and which is necessary?
There may be, but this is an argument that the defendant, quite frankly, has waived on appeal, hasn't been made in the briefs, and now is making for the first time an oral argument that it's not necessary for law enforcement purposes. And I would point out that SHI's disclosure or not of the data is not governed by 1385. It's governed by 1382, governing criminal investigative data. And that goes to the heart of why we have two completely different issues being talked about here, one of which was never presented to or passed upon by the district court. I'd like to highlight the fact that appellant on appeal alleges that a different actor committed an improper act, and arguably, as we can see here and in the briefs, there's a different statute that would govern the actions of the different actor. If that doesn't demonstrate that we're dealing with different issues, not merely different theories, but different issues, I'm not certain what would. In the district court, everyone understood because the defendant's motion specifically said The search warrant in this case was obtained by the use of illegally obtained medical data. The Nobles County Jail improperly released medical data relating to defendant to Deputy Shy. And this medical data was used to obtain the search warrant. So the improper release was clearly the issue that was brought to the district court's attention and litigated below. The appellant's omnibus memo addressed only the release of information from Shy from the jailer to Shy. The state's responsive motion addressed only that issue in a prophylactic argument about the constitutionality of a urine booking search, and the district court's omnibus memo, as Judge Cochran has pointed out, answered only the question of whether the jailer properly disclosed the information to Deputy Shy under 1385. That ruling has not been challenged on appeal.
But, you know, to be fair, during the hearing, didn't the district court, during the omnibus hearing, didn't the district court say that his understanding of the legal issue here is whether or not the urine analysis performed as part of the booking process can serve as a basis for the issuance of a search warrant for a blood draw? So, you know, at that point, the judge seemed to have stated the issue a little more broadly, although in the judge's order, I think the order really is limited to the release of the data from the jail staff to Officer Shea. I don't think there was any argument made in appellant's memorandum of law in support of the motion relating to the issue that's on appeal here, nor does the judge appear to address it in the order itself. But at the hearing, was the issue phrased more broadly?
It was by the district court phrased more broadly, and the parties agreed to that broad phrasing of the issue. But given the way that the hearing then progressed, and we had only the testimony of the jailer, and then the parties' litigation choices in what issues to litigate in their memoranda, it was clear that the issue was focused in. It was a narrow issue to decide, and that is only the narrow issue that was decided by the district court. It would not be fair for this court to say the district court erred in making the decision it made on a basis that wasn't presented to it. That's not appellate review. That's trial for the first time on appeal. And this is a narrow issue resolved by the district court on those grounds. And the law is clear that a party cannot obtain appellate review by raising a broad general issue and advancing a different theory on appeal than was presented to the district court.
Is this a different theory in that they were challenging the warrant?
It is a different theory. I already argue it's a different issue altogether, but it's at the very least a different theory, because the theory in the district court was that the jailer could not disclose to the deputy. The theory now is, at least in the briefs, the theory was that the deputy couldn't disclose to the court. And now at oral argument, we've got a third theory, which is that it wasn't necessary for law enforcement purposes for the jailer to disclose to the deputy. I think we're appellant, unfortunately or not, is stuck with the theory that was presented to the district court.
Let's just assume that we disagree and that we conclude there is no forfeiture of the ultimate question whether the urine test results could have been included in the search warrant application. What is your strongest argument that we should construe subdivision 4 of the statute as authorizing a presentation to the court?
Certainly. The strongest argument there is that, first of all, the text of subdivision 4 clearly contemplates disclosure to the district court.
Well, does it? I mean, it talks about, it seems to me that what that does is recharacterizes data that would have been private to public after it's been somehow and for some reason presented to a court.
Certainly, but I don't think the legislature would provide for what happens to the data after it's been presented to a court if it were illegal in all circumstances to present that data to the court. So I think the subdivision 4 clearly, by its plain language, manifests the intention of the legislature that this data can be disclosed to courts. Otherwise, this statute is simply surplusage and, quite frankly, would deal with what happens with an illegal disclosure. It would be bizarre and indeed absurd for a provision in the Government Data Practices Act to make data that was otherwise private or confidential public if it were illegally disclosed.
What about appellant's point that the subject of the data can request the data and they could file that data with the court, and then once it's filed with the court, it would be public under 13.85 subdivision 4?
There are two or maybe three problems with that point. The first is that the subject of the data...
The subject or the victim.
And I'll deal with them separately.
Okay.
The first is that the subject of the data, and the victim, for that matter, are not government entities. Therefore, they are not subject to the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. And once they obtain the data, they can do with it whatever they choose. And therefore, the Government Data Practices Act is no longer concerned with the data as possessed and presented by them. The second problem with that, as to the subject of the data, is that the subject of the data does not have access to confidential data. And Subdivision 4 specifically provides for what happens to confidential data in addition to private data when disclosed to the court. Finally, with regard to the victim, like law enforcement, is allowed to be disclosed information for a specific purpose in Subdivision 5. Subdivision 5, the problem with the victim is the same problem that appellant claims there is with law enforcement. Subdivision 5 provides no explicit authorization for the victim to provide that information to the court. I think there's a very strong argument that it implicitly does, because the data is provided to the victim for purposes of obtaining restitution. But that's the same implicit argument that applies to law enforcement, where they can be disclosed data for law enforcement purposes, and then there's no restriction on what law enforcement purposes they can be disclosed the data for. And obtaining a search warrant is certainly a law enforcement purpose.
Is there a separate statute that authorizes release of the data to a victim?
Not that I'm aware of. The statutes cited in appellant's, I think it's reply brief, are 611A. Those are the general restitution statutes, but those statutes don't specifically address disclosure of private corrections and detention data.
So under 13.05 subdivision 4, it limits disclosure of private or confidential data on an individual except as provided in this subdivision. So what part of subdivision 4, 1305 subdivision 4, would authorize the release of the data to the courts?
And that's where I would direct us back to the fact that we're talking about a different issue, and it's my position that once the data is passed to a law enforcement agency, we're not talking about corrections and detention data. And I think an example...
We're talking about criminal investigative
data. We're talking about criminal investigative data. And then 1382, subdivision 15, authorizes the disclosure. And I think it's important maybe to step out of this specific fact situation and consider if the arresting agency were the St. Paul Police Department. Same facts, the arresting agency is the St. Paul Police Department. The detaining agency is the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department. The Ramsey County Sheriff's Department, to the extent that it has data about the arrestee, has private corrections and detention data. The St. Paul Police Department is engaged in a criminal investigation. They don't maintain corrections and detention data because that data isn't gathered as a result of the detention of an individual. So if the Ramsey County jailer told the St. Paul police officer this same information, there would be no question under the Government Data Practices Act that that data, as possessed by the St. Paul police officer, was criminal investigative data. No question. There's no argument from the statute, and there's no principled reason for saying that the St. Paul Police Department has corrections and detention data. The only reason it has that data is for purposes of preparing a case against an individual. And so that helps, I think, to understand how the statutes interplay. And I think that's important to bear in mind here. And appellant has argued that I'm trying to make an in pari materia argument. I want to point out that that's not the argument that the state is making. First of all, I assert that the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act is one statute. It has to be interpreted cohesively and together to give effect to all of its purposes. And the state's argument is a whole text or a whole statute argument. And that doesn't require any finding of ambiguity. It simply requires the court to read the entire statute together and to give effect to all of its provisions. And that's what the state's interpretation and the state's references to 1382 are directed towards, in addition to the fact that, again, I maintain it's a different claim as to whether Deputy Shy could disclose to the court, and that's governed by 1382.
Where does the Constitution fit into your argument, whether it's a search or whether it's obtaining a confession, you know?
Certainly.
How does the Constitution relate?
I think the Constitution relates insofar as it relates as the question is the legality of the booking search. That was an issue that the appellant specifically did not raise at the district court, even though the district court decided it. Moreover, appellant has not challenged that ruling that this was a constitutional booking search on appeal. To the extent that appellant tries to argue that this interpretation of the statute is an end run around Thompson, appellant's quarrel is really with the holding about whether a urine test as part of the booking process is a reasonable booking search under the Fourth Amendment. And that's an issue that's not raised on appeal and doesn't factor into this. So the interpretation of the statute so as to avoid any constitutional issues is simple. If the data is obtained in violation of the Constitution, it doesn't matter what the Government Data Practices Act says you can do with it. It can't be used in a criminal case. It's subject to suppression. I also argued that the appellant has advanced no reason why suppression is the appropriate and necessary remedy if there is a violation of the Government Data Practices Act. And I'm not asserting that the defendant has to show a constitutional violation to avail themselves of the suppression remedy, but it's not automatic at that point in time. The defendant then has the burden of demonstrating that suppression is an appropriate remedy and hasn't done so. Moreover, the district court didn't pass on the question of whether suppression is an appropriate remedy because it concluded there was no violation of the act. For all of those reasons, I would respectfully ask this court to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jacks, you have the final word.
Thank you. I'd like to start by saying if the court does indeed consider the order of the court as not having addressed or ruled on the broader issue of whether this information could be disclosed in the search warrant affidavit, that you still consider whether or not it was necessary for law enforcement purposes. Under the Supreme Court's decision in Heilman last year, the court determined that if an issue is decisive to the entire controversy, that this court may and, in fact, should decide the issue. It certainly wasn't necessary for law enforcement purposes because the officer had different facts that didn't involve private medical information that they could have considered in or they could have included in the warrant. But regardless of whether you consider the transfer from Bohr to Shea or the broader issue here, you have to construe 1385. And
so, I'm sorry, go ahead. I have a question, but go ahead.
I'm happy to answer your question.
So respondent argues that once the information is given to Officer Shea, it becomes criminal investigative data under 13.82. So why wouldn't our focus be on that statute rather than 13.85?
Well, I would disagree that it becomes investigative data because it's still private medical data, but to the extent you would find it to be investigative data, the investigative data 1382 statute considers it to be confidential during the investigation, and we're still within the investigation here. The only information that's public under 1382 is arrest data, response data, and incident data, and this is none of those. This doesn't fit into any of those categories. It's general investigative data that under Subdivision 7 of 1382, it continues to be confidential information until the charge is made and the state prosecutes the case.
And why isn't a search warrant application just that data?
Because, as the state conceded in their brief, arrest data includes the search warrant, but it doesn't include the search warrant affidavit. That would sort of be, you know, putting the cart before the horse in the sense that it would be deeming the private data to be public before it's been actually presented to the court. But under either, you know, in construing these statutes, 1385 and 1382, again, our ultimate point is this, that you have to presume that the court or that the legislature did not intend to violate the Constitution. And the Fourth Amendment makes it very clear that law enforcement has to get a warrant in order to obtain a urine sample. And what happened here is if they're going to use the urine sample to in a prosecution for a DWI, this urine was taken in order to determine appropriate medical care for Mr. Cruz. It was not taken in order to prosecute him or investigate him for a DUI. The Nobles County deputies shared the information. They included it in an affidavit, even though they had ample information to get the warrant that they're required to get for the urine or the blood. And as a result, if the court adopts the state's argument here, they will render the statute unconstitutional, or at a minimum, it would be in violation of, or it would be contrary to the legislative intent in passing the statute. So we would ask that you read the statute to prohibit the inclusion of urine, private medical information in an affidavit. Secondarily, if you so feel under Heilman, to determine that law enforcement can't release the information or if it's not necessary for law enforcement purposes as it was in here, and reverse Mr. Cruz's driving after cancellation and DWI convictions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you both for your helpful arguments and briefing. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals.